Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Just be sitting up there jacked with Pepsi.
I'm there for the pack out. You just got to pack me in.
Committed to the bow early on. Like, I love getting close and putting up.
You cover a range of stuff on here too, right? Like,
we call this the THP World Headquarters.
You know, my grandpa Roy Weatherby.
I came into like that golden little pocket where there was like four or five different bulls. Just,
you're Canadian. We're doing a Canadian podcast.
My name's Douglas Bowes.
I'm Robbie Denning.
Roy Campbell.
So, Mark, thanks for hopping on the show again, buddy.
Yeah, man, good to be back on.
So like we were talking about, we're going to do a four-part mini-series, and basically what we're going to do is we're going to dive into your program, first of all, where people can find it, how they get access to it, and then we're going to work through the modules. And basically what we want to do is we want to get people looking for elk spots now, not middle of August when it's already, you know, that time you can actually have found, you should have your spot e-scouted. Maybe if you get a little time, you know, a weekend here or there, take the family out, do some actual boots on the ground scouting. So, obviously you've been on the show lots. Everybody knows who you are. And even if you weren't on the show, everybody would know who you are anyway. So let's just start with talking about, tree line, where we can find it, how we get access, and then working into the program.
Hey. Well, thanks for having me on. I always love doing these little mini series because, you know, a lot of these podcasts and a lot of this information gets out there. You get surface level stuff and you don't really get to get into the weeds very much. But so many people message me all the time that, Mark, I love the fact that you go into all this detail, and sometimes the detail gets long and it gets drawn out, but it's an important part of what you're doing. And when you just kind of surface level stuff, I don't think people always get where they want to go. So, anyway, thanks for the introduction. So last year I made a consolidation to one platform. I used to have treelinepursuits.com. I used to have my llamas were on a different site. So I just redid all of my stuff now is at treelineacademy.net. All the courses are there. The bear tour that we're doing, my llama rental stuff is there. All my apparel stuff. You know, shop stuff. Everything's under one umbrella now, so it's a lot easier for people to find if they're looking for course information or podcasts. All the podcasts that I've ever done, including all the Focus podcasts, are all there in chronological order with a description so you can kind of search and kind of look through them. I'm trying to make it easy for people to get all the content that we've been working on for, you know, the past 3 to 4 years. And so, yeah, you can find everything there.
Beauty.
Awesome.
Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about, I'm going to bring the screen up here. So actually, before I bring the screen up, let's talk about just membership. So it's a two-year, you get in, you have access for 2 years, right?
Right, so and that's funny you said that, because what happened originally was the course is over 30 hours and it's 50 modules. So a lot of guys and women, let's just be honest, let's just use the word people. A lot of the people that end up taking my course way underestimate how long it's going to take them to work through it, right? And so, I don't feel that you can really grasp, especially if you're a new hunter, you almost have to apply these principles and go out and just do it. And then I think the real benefit is that coming back and going through again and your second year, like when you've got some experience under your belt, you've got a little bit of backcountry knowledge, now you're tying in with some of this elk finding information. I think that the aha moment, or the people that, when people's eyes are really opened, is really the second year. And so I hate 1 year subscriptions. I hate subscriptions anyway. But I have to do something. So I set it to 2 years. And even after that, I got people renewing. I do a 50% renewal. So I try to make it where it's really cost effective for, if you need more than 2 years, then we'll make it happen. And I am finding quite a few that want to do after the 2 years, but 2 years gives you two full seasons to work through it. So that was an important part of what my original plan was, that I want to give people time to try it out, look through it, go on a hunt, and then come back and kind of almost do it again at a higher level, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely does.
That's so funny, Mark. That's exactly what I did. I took your course. You use all your apps. You start planning a couple hunts. And then when you get boots on the ground, you start connecting the dots of, okay, this is what I'm actually seeing when I'm looking on my Google Earth, and I get down that level and I'm actually boots on the ground in that spot. You start to really be able to connect those dots. So by your second year, it's good to go back in, revisit stuff. And it's funny because maybe a lot of people will go straight to the part of identifying elk terrain, and then they go back to the more technical stuff, how to put it all together so it's more seamless. And I found that was exactly what I did. I went through the basic stuff, and then you go back and you revisit and fine-tune stuff.
Well, that's what I'm seeing too, and that's the feedback I've been getting too, is that guys, a lot of folks are saying things like, I really didn't, it seemed so, you went through that pretty quick, and I didn't really realize the importance of that until I actually, like the zones of pressure, for example. When people start really analyzing where the pressure is coming from, how the pressure is getting into their hunt area, how to look at trails and how to look at trailheads, a lot of people go, yeah. Well, then when they find a situation where there's a lot of people and they start to realize that, hey, I should look at that again. And one of the things I am going to do, guys, is this next year, I've learned so much more about putting this stuff together in a way that can be digested, that I want to go back and redo some of it to make it a little more in the order that you might want to consider doing it. You can do it any order you want, but I have learned some things, and I'm adding some new things, some new technologies. Guys, the minute I publish this thing, the OnX, the Gaia, is out of date, right? There's a new feature. There's a new this. Yeah. There's a new that. So it's impossible to be perfectly up to date, but I am going to go back and remodularize it a little bit and tweak it, and I'll be honest with you, improve my video editing skills. I get sick and tired of looking at my face when I'm looking at a course. I've got my little face down in the right-hand corner. That's going away. It's just like, yeah. I can't take it. And so I've learned a lot over the last few years about that, and especially as I work on this new bear course, I'm learning a lot that just how to put it together in a little better format.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't even imagine the work goes into it.
Oh, yes.
So like we were saying, what we want to do is we want to get people looking, like, working on their e-scouting now, not come middle of August. So, you know, here in British Columbia, we have a spring bear season. A lot of places do. A lot of Western states do. Now, while you're, you know, if you're going through and learning all this stuff now in February, spending a bit of time in February, March, when you're out looking for bears, glassing for bears, you can start to take notes of stuff you learned in and just keep mental notes of places where might be conducive to elk. Come, you know, middle of August, when you can actually go put some boots on the ground in different areas where the snowpack is gone. So I really want to get people involved and taking this course and getting them to actually go through the modules right now, rather than, you know, we talk about this stuff in the middle of the summertime and middle of August rolls around, mm-hmm. and then it's like, hey, here you go. So let's talk about, now we know where to find your, we know where to find it. Now let's talk about getting access. So it's a 2-year subscription. Now once we're in, I'm going to pull up the screen. So I'm hoping you guys can see it. Hopefully I know what I'm doing here. Share. You guys see that there?
Yep.
Okay. So this is really great. So as you can see, you can see this little 4% complete.
We're going to see, we're going to see exactly what you've been doing, what you haven't been doing.
No, nobody fits into that at all. Okay. So we're in the course right now. Now it's welcome to the course. So now let's just kind of, Mark, walk us through, like, you don't have to get into details, but what I'll do is I'll click on these and we'll kind of just quickly go through. Obviously, we're not going to go through all of them in great detail. We just want to kind of like,
We'll just hit the highlights.
Highlights. Yeah. So tell me where we're walking through, and I'll click on them, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. So before we did that, I wanted to say something about what you just said. So in my course sales, this is what's funny, because this is so – it's not funny, but it's eye-opening. I sell 10-to-1 courses, 10-to-1, in August versus any other month of the year. And I'm always like cringe when I get to August and all these guys start buying the course. Cause I'm like, you waited too long to be able to really go through it and prepare a hunt plan and get a custom markup set going. All the things you can do it. You can do it, right? But you're under the gun to, especially if you're a new hunter. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate what you said, that now is the time. Is that you should start working on, at the same time you're looking at application strategies and what tags you're going to go for and all that stuff, you should start working on hunt areas. And there's a lot of things you can do initially that's not a waste of time. You know, when you start looking at pressure, you start looking at core hunt areas, you start looking at just doing flyover tours, which I'm going to go over tonight. I have a live webinar tonight. I know this is coming out after the fact, but I am going to go over some of the Google Earth stuff tonight, and some of it's related to early identification of hunt areas. So I did want to mention that my number one month is August, which it should not be. It should be right now in February. Okay, so it's funny. I love looking at your percent there, Kevin. But
I had to bring that because I knew you were going to come.
Funny.
So the other thing that I could tell, I'm like the federal government, right? I'm watching over you guys. Now, not really. I do not pay attention, but I can go in there and I can see which modules you're skipping and I can see which ones you're looking at, which ones you're looking at the most. And that's actually what we were just talking about, Derek. I'm going to redo some things based on these statistics that I've seen. So the most people, like you just mentioned, they get in here and they start scrolling down through there. Kevin's not even there yet. And you get down to where it says elk finding contest. Okay, I'm going to start there.
Find elk.
That's 20 modules in, and you're going to start there. Which, hey, there's nothing wrong with it, right?
Guilty. Straight to that part.
But I think you will be surprised that the little tips and things that you'll pick up in a lot of the other modules, you know, I've been chasing elk for this will be my 34th year, in the West, and I've learned a lot of things, and not because I'm good at it, it's because I've made every freaking mistake known to man. And a big part of this course is really helping people to not make some of the mistakes that I've made. Anyway, a lot of people do want to skip ahead and skip around, and there's nothing wrong with that. And what's great about the course, it does track your percentage of each module. It keeps track of where you're at, and it keeps track of where you're at in each video. I do, right, guys, realize that some of these videos can get, they're an hour long, and they're mm-hmm. detailed. And so being able to stop in the middle and come back to the same spot was important. And so it does keep that kind of in track as well. So, you know, right off the bat, you got the welcomes, you got the things. It's got a curriculum overview, gives you kind of what's all included. But the most skipped over modules in the course are the realities of e-scouting and that understanding limitations. And guys, these are the biggest hunt killers. For guys that get over their head, they plan hunts that are too far from the trailhead for what they're capable of doing, or more importantly, what their partners are capable of doing. Especially if they're newer hunters, they don't understand the western terrain, they don't understand the effects of altitude. So there's a lot of grounding information in there in those couple of modules that help you kind of set up your whole plan for success. So but again, people tend to be like, oh, I know what I can do, I know what I can't do, I don't need to look at that. So again, I just wanted to throw that out there. The state method research, excuse me, there's a lot of information there, a lot of links there, which actually I've got a couple of broken links that I found just recently that I need to fix. And so in here, we start breaking down the various states, the various links to the various harvest statistics for all the states. I've tried to organize it so it's really easy for you to get to where you want to go to analyze it. I talk a little bit about how I personally do it. Now, this is one of the modules that I'm going to redo and add a lot of new stuff. I'm going to insert a lot of go hunt stuff. I'm going to insert a lot of other research methods that I use. And there's some, it talks about articles, research articles that I've used and that I continue to use. Like, for example, Top Rut. So there you go. That Top Rut is defunct now. You can no longer get those KML files from that company. But you can get them from me now because I wanted to feel that they're so valuable. That was one of the reasons that I created those files. But, remember this is a 4-year-old program. So I do have a few things in here that I'm going to go back and I'm going to adjust and update. But for the most part though, it's all pretty solid. And then next up, we get into the basic needs of elk, which is a lot of people don't understand what elk eat during certain times of the year. A lot of people think of elk, they think, well, they eat grass. So I need to find just places that, well, that's not true. Elk, grass makes up a big portion of their diet, there's no doubt about it. But at certain times of year, they focus on woody plants, they eat a lot of forbs, they switch grasses, they switch types of grasses depending on if they're wintering versus the season during the rut. And so there's a lot of considerations in the basic needs as well. And one of the best presenters for basic needs of elk that I've ever heard is Randy Newberg. He spends a lot of time and he's put a lot of work into what elk need during different cycles and different stages of the year. So I've learned a lot from him and mm-hmm. his inspiration and some of his stuff has a lot to do with what I've done here. So, do you guys have any questions on those or you just keep kind of going with that?
Yeah, I mean, for the listeners up in Canada, a lot of this stuff though, like the state applications obviously isn't essential to what we're doing up here.
Right.
But everything else is, I mean, elk are elk. So just because some of this stuff and you guys are talking about some of the stuff that's in like Montana, Colorado, Utah, I mean, Utah's, these are all bordering states of Canada, British Columbia, Alberta, right? So a lot of this stuff is essential and is, it's contiguous with what's going on up here.
Well, as far as the state research, guys, I hope as you're going through this, what you're going to pick up on is not so much, like you said, Kevin, the specifics. It's the process that you need to go through, right? The process is the same. How to look at harvest data, how to do 5-year averaging, how to look at various research articles on habitat in Canada. I guarantee you there's been a lot of research done on elk habitat that has the word hunting is not in there one time.
Yeah, right.
And those articles are gold, guys. When you can find that level of research, you start to understand elk so much better than you did before you read that article. And so when I talk about research methods and applications and stuff, all that has to be – I want to include all of that. So don't get caught up into, well, I'm not in Montana, I'm not in Colorado, I'm not in – that's fine. But what I want you to get out of this is the process and the methodology that you're going to work through as you identify units, areas, zones, whatever your situation is where you're trying to apply it to, for example, Canada. And it's funny. I don't know if it's because of your podcast, guys, or not, but the numbers of Canadians that are reaching out to me saying, hey, Google Earth in Canada sucks, and how do you get better quality images, and they're always fuzzy, and they're always this and that, and Alaska too, same. I get the same about Alaska. But the numbers of Canadians that are finding, Tree Line Academy and getting involved is really incredible. I'm getting almost as many questions from Canadians as I am from Americans on it right now. It's really, I guess there's a need. There's just not a lot of resources, that I've been able to uncover, at least for Canadians. Now, I am working on toolkits.
I'm not familiar with any of them. So, I mean, that's why stuff like this is good. And like I said, I mean, elk are elk, and you know, I've killed elk. Like this year, I killed elk in British Columbia and Alberta. I mean, they do the exact same thing regardless where you are, you know.
Well, I am working on too, guys. I've gotten such a demand from Canada that I am working on GIS tools for Canada. It's more complicated for me because I can find the data, but I have to understand your system a little better than what I do in order to apply that data. So I'm in the process. I hope by next year I'm going to have a full set of Googler toolkits just like I have for the states. For Canada is my goal. So I'm working on that.
Awesome.
As well. So I might actually be picking your guys' brains a little on that as well when I get to it. You know, historical fires and stuff like that's pretty simple, but when it comes to hunting units, hunting zones and linking all that stuff in, that's where, I've got to learn the system. Mm-hmm. So basic needs of elk, we talked about that. Identifying core hunt areas is the next module kind of in the chain. And what we're really doing there is this is where it gets a little, this is where I want to come back and improve this because it's really difficult to put this in the right order for the things that you should be doing step by step by step. Because I like to do e-scouting. The way I approach my e-scouting guys is by little bites. And what I mean by that is I try not to sit down and do a whole hunt plan at one session. I think it's a mistake. I think you miss things. You overlook things. You don't see the big picture all the time. I'll work on hunt area A for a little while, and then I'll work on another whole complete different hunt area. Then I'll come back and work on A. I find that going back and forth, I just start to pick up on things that I overlooked very easily. And I'm like, oh, I didn't really notice that you could get into this from over here, or from even across the state line. You know, just little things like that that start to make, well, that's obvious. I don't know why how did I miss that road? How did I miss that way in? Or how did I not identify this? How did I miss this north slope over here? And, oh, that road is closed. I thought it was open. All those things. It's hard to get all of that done with one pass. Does that make sense? Yeah. And I think that the more you come back and revisit your hunt plans and your strategy, the better they get. Now, in order to do that, you have to have a pretty good documentation system or journaling or notes and your the way you're marking up the custom icons and the custom colors and all the things that I've talked about a million times on a lot of podcasts. All these things have to be working and have to be, you know, they have to be firing on all cylinders for it to really make sense and work for you. So, you know, I like the way you're scrolling through. So you can kind of, when I'm looking for core hunt areas, what I'm looking for is areas that I want to consider for hunting spots, right? These are not, maybe they're going to make the cut, maybe they won't. But like, let's just say, for example, if I'm going to Montana and I'm going to be hunting for a couple weeks, I want to have, when I leave for my hunt, I want to have 3 to 5 hunt areas ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But that might mean, guys, that I start with 10. I might have 10 outlines. And so what I like to use, the tool I like to use, I don't want to get too much in the weeds here, is I like to use the polygon tool. I drop a quick area polygon around any place that I'm interested in, and I make a few notes about it, and I move on. And, man, that technique has really helped me to identify some really prime spots. And if I find that I'm not interested in it or it doesn't work, I just delete them. But I will put those polygons around any real quickly around any area that I'm considering, make a few notes, and then move on. So when I'm talking about identifying core hunting areas, I'm really initially looking to label or identify areas that I need to come back to that, or I want to fully vet and I want to break out a little more. I want to vet them more. I want to really start to dig in to these areas to see where they are going to end up on my list of five. So one last thing I'll say about that, guys, is I work really hard not to have a number one hunt area, especially at this time of year. It's hard not to do, guys. You find this spot, you're like, oh, this is the mother load. This is on my A list. And you spend so much time on that one and you really neglect your other four, right? And when it comes time and you get into the mountains and you get in there and you're like, oh, this isn't as good as I thought it was going to be. Well, your B, C, D, and E are not really fully vetted because you put all of your eggs in one basket or, you know, most of them. And so I work real hard not to have a preconceived idea of what my number one, two, three, four, five hunt area is until I get through the whole process. And I am shocked at how many times that number four that I thought was, oh, man, this is a Hail Mary spot. This is a Hail Mary backup spot. Once I really looked at it and really, it ended up being my number one spot.
Mm-hmm.
But so I hope you guys are picking up on that, that I try not to get too tunnel visioned on your prime spot versus, a backup spot, at least at this point in the process.
Yeah, I know. So when I first met you, that's one thing we talked about, and that's one thing I always felt like I was doing, was putting too much emphasis on one spot. And I mean, mm-hmm. you and I have known each other for what, like 3 years now? And in three yep. years, I've killed four elk. So, I mean, all these things that we've been talking about and, you know, I've been absorbing throughout that time is definitely working.
Well, and success breeds success, guys. You know, you guys know how it is. Like, mm-hmm. once you can start moving the needle, you know, I think that's why the success rates are so low. You know, it's the 80-20 rule, guys. 80% of the guys, 20% of the elk hunters kill 80% of the elk. Mm-hmm. It's just the top, the lampers, the Sam Davises, I mean, you've killed three out of four. That's pretty damn good. You got a few guys that are at the top of the food chain, and then everyone else is struggling for this 5% realm. So these are the things. The things we're talking about right now and that we're going to be talking about through this whole series are all things that all of these guys are doing to move that needle. Now, they may not call it four hunt areas. They may not call it zones of pressure. They may not call it establishing a hunt parameter. But I can guarantee you that these top-level dudes are going through a process that's very similar to this. They don't even – some of them, like Ryan Lampers, doesn't even know why he does it. Mm-hmm. He just has been doing it for so long. He's had so much experience. He just knows, well, that spot's got elk. There's going to be elk right there. It's just he can look at it and he doesn't realize that subliminally he's processing that whole environment, that whole landscape, and he's making a determination based on experience, knowledge, all this stuff, and it just makes sense to him. He's like, well, that's obvious. That's the spot. But a newer hunter would look at it and be like, well, I don't know why that spot's any better than this spot over here. Because they got nothing to base it on. They got no past experience to apply to it. And that's where I hope this course is going to set, you know, differentiate some of these hunters from others, is that it's going to give you a strategy and the tools to work through the process. And maybe you'll use some, maybe you'll use all of them. You know, maybe you'll use very few of them, but the ones that you do use and the ones that you do apply will move the needle, guaranteed will move the needle. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah, you're going to absorb all this stuff. And like you said, I mean, every place is different. Every hunter is different. How everybody hunts is different. And I mean, you're going to find ways that you're going to apply these specific things to your application, and, but they will become successful. And you, like, subconsciously, you might not even know you're doing it, but you're just doing them.
That's right. And guys, maps, you know, I can't stress this enough. The more you do it, the more, the better you get at it, right? Like anything. And if, you know, I'm pretty freaking good with technology and mapping and tools. That's my strength. Because I'm from the Midwest. I was traveling to hunt elk for the first 27 years. I never, not one trip boots on the ground scouted Western mm-hmm. elk. Never. Every single place I went to was all digital. And still to this day, even living in Montana, I talk about this a lot, but I rarely put boots on the ground. I just don't think it's that valuable. Now, a lot of guys do, and I think it's to each their own. But where elk are in June, where they are in May, where they are in, is not where they're going to necessarily be in September. And now there's things you can do when you're finding old rub lines in June. That gives you some idea where the rutting areas are. I get it. And everyone said, you know, you read a lot of research about where the calving areas are. A lot of times where the rut zones end up being. I get all that too. But I will go out on a limb and say, if you're going to spend a full weekend boots on the ground scouting, you're going to drive to spot A 3 or 4 hours, 5 hours, 10, whatever it is. And then you're going to spend the whole weekend hiking around. Maybe you might cover 20 miles. Maybe you might cover 25. If you took the same amount of time, all the time that you're there, and you spent it in your applications and aerial photos and analyzing view sheds and 3D analysis and flyover tours and zones of pressure. Now, you spent all that time doing that, you are way, 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 way further down the road than you ever will be boots on the ground.
Yeah.
You can't cover the territory. You can't see everything you want to see. And now there's nothing wrong with it. If you've got the time and you've got the resources to do it, by all means, knowing terrain and it, being able to be in there and get a feel for it, is never a waste of time. Don't get me wrong on this. I'm just saying if I had to spend X amount of hours and that's all I had, I would rather spend it looking at big, giant zones and breaking them down than I would drive into one particular trailhead in the middle of XYZ unit and hiking around for 3 days. Does that make sense? Or am I,
Yeah, it does. But the thing about it, I just want to quickly add, is like time is the biggest currency for everybody as we get older, right? We've got very busy lives. The nice thing about like Tree Line Academy is you can plug away at it if you start now. Like if you go in, buy the get the program now, and we got a promo focus 22 promo code will give you a bit of a discount. You go in and you buy it now, and you just start chipping away at these things. Every night you put the kids to bed, you come down, you got half an hour mm-hmm. before you go to bed. You go through a couple of the modules and you go through them, right? And you just slowly chip away at it. That way, you still have lots of time where you can go back and look at stuff you didn't understand and you can kind of slowly put it together over time. Whereas, like you said, you do it in August and then as quickly you're scanning through because now you don't have time and you realize you want to go hunting, but you know, you're not really absorbing all the stuff you would if you would have taken the time and gone through the process in the way it's designed to go through.
And talk about the confidence. I know for myself personally, getting through the course, identifying core hunting areas, you got plan A, plan B, plan C, you have all these plans, but then you have separate plans in like in Alberta, our zones are a little bit smaller. You've already identified a completely new area. So like you're saying, like maybe you've had some past success. It's too easy to get stuck into a rut. Now I know exactly where I'm going. And if I've gone that hunt plan, I'm not returning to that area if I don't find elk. I can up and move if I have to, because if there's no bugling, no rut action, I can go to a completely other zone. And you have that confidence, that security blanket, that I've already vetted all that. I know where I'm going to go. I'm not going to get stuck in a rut, because I know for myself, that's what this program helped me get out of, was getting in ruts where you're just pounding an area over and over again, when really you should have had a plan for a completely new area and just moved.
Man, that was perfect. Probably the number one comment I get from hunters after the season is, man, I spent too much time in an area that didn't have help.
Yep.
I spent too much, and so let me give you the scenario. You guys are probably going to laugh when I tell you this. So here's your scenario. You're 7 days into, you're on a 7-10 day hunt. You're day five. It's just not working out. You're not running into elk. You're not encountering elk. You're not hearing elk bugles. You're like, okay, here's your mind. Okay, I got 5 days. Do I have time to make a move? Is it really going to be productive? And if you work it out the way that I propose that you work it out, you already know how long it's going to take you to drive over there. You know how long it's going to take you to hike into your camp. You know exactly where you're going to camp. You know where your first five glassing spots are going to be. You've already got them labeled. You know how long it's going to take you to hike to that glassing spot. Exactly. So think about that. So now it's noon and you're on day five and the morning was terrible. You're ready to make a move. Well, you pull out your hunt plan. You're like, okay, in 3 hours, I can be to this trailhead on this new hunt area. It's going to take me 2 hours to hike in. I can be there before dark. And then if I set my alarm at 4 in the morning, I could be at that glassing spot by first light. Guys, that scenario makes you excited to move, right? But when you don't have that and you're sitting there like, well, I guess I could go over there. Hopefully I'll hear something. And I don't even know where I'm going to. Guys, what if you have to hike into the dark? What if you have to try to pick a campsite in the dark, right? No, you're going to be likely. Now, I'm not saying everybody, but you're going to tend to be more likely to not do it. But when you have it all worked out to the nth detail, like I just told you, and the way that's actually coming up in the next three modules, developing a strategic hunt plan, guys, that template that I have in this course is the exact template that I use every single year. Now, I tweak it and modify it and whatever, but that template is, and I just updated it again with a few other things that were helpful for people, I think. So I just updated it a couple months ago. But anyway, that template goes to the level that we just talked about. How long is it going to take me to drive there? How far is my pack in? Where am I going to camp? Where's my first bugling spots or my glassing spots or whatever your strategy is going to be? I'm telling you guys are 9 times more likely to pack up and move to an area and find elk than just be like, well, I got 4 days left. I'm just going to grind it out here.
And let alone if you have reception to even download the maps that you need.
That's right. So, that's the thing. How many guys have I seen pulled over on the side of the road and I pull up? I'm like, what's up, boys? Well, I'm trying to download some new maps for this new area I'm going to. I'm like, guys, I drove one time. I hate to admit this. I made a mistake.
I think everybody's done that.
A mistake. I had 3 or 4 hunt areas and we had a snowstorm that was just monumental in September. We got 18 inches of snow and I'm like, holy crap, we got to change elevations. Well, I did not have, I talk about, if you guys heard me on having those 3 to 5 hunt areas, one of them or two of them needs to be a radical change in elevation for a lot of reasons. But, and this is a good example, we had to get out of the snow. Not that the elk weren't there, but we couldn't hike in it. We couldn't drive in it. We couldn't get where we wanted to go. So it was a limiter, not because maybe we weren't running into elk or that the elk were moved, is because we were limited by being able to access it. Mm-hmm. And so I had to drive 5 hours into Dillon, Montana. I'm even going to tell you where it's at. I had to drive into Dillon, Montana and download some new maps. And I'm just going to say it. We didn't kill any elk. And because we were working on our hunt plan in the middle of the freaking hunt.
Yeah.
And it was a mess. It was a real mess. And I learned my lesson. And ever since then, I don't make that mistake.
Mm-hmm. One of those hard lessons we all have.
It's a hard one.
Oh yeah.
And,
it's never a good feeling.
Okay,
so let's keep rolling through these modules here.
So the zones of pressure is the next one, okay? We've talked about core hunting areas. There's a lot there. We just kind of scratched the surface. And so zones of pressure, this is an area where I feel like most elk hunters do not spend enough time at this area because there is a lot here. And it's very – this is the one where guys – the most – this is the one module where people come to me and say – you know, I didn't really grasp what you were saying the first time. I didn't really get it. When you say zones of pressure, I'm like, I know what you mean. I mean, where are the hunters going to park? And where they, I get what you're saying. Well, not really. So what you're looking at here is not only is where the pressure is going to come from, where it's likely to come from, and how much pressure is there. Well, how do you know all that? I mean, how would you know that in a spot that you've never been to? You've never gone there before ever. How are you going to make any kind of reasonable determinations for that? Well, we go through that in this module, and there's a lot of things you guys can do. A lot. You can zoom in on every single trailhead and look at the, and you have to do it in Google Earth Pro, guys. This is the key. You can't do it in OnX. You can't do it in GoHunt. You can't do it in anything else because of two reasons. One, the image quality is not good enough for this level of detail. Number two, you don't have the dates of the imagery, accurate dates of the imagery. Now, GoHunt has some historical data now, but still doesn't have the breadth of historical data that's available in Google Earth Pro. So, for example, you zoom in on Trailhead A. You're looking at it, and you're paging through the years of aerial photos in Google Earth, right? Well, you look at June. Well, there's a whole bunch of cars there in June. There's a whole bunch of cars there in July. You get to September, and there's, like, almost no cars there. And like, okay, that's interesting. October, no cars. November, bunch of cars. I'm like, okay, maybe there's a lot of late season. Maybe this is a late season. So, guys, there's no magic formula here, but looking at these trailheads or these access points or dead-end roads, all these so-called takeoff points, when you zoom in on them, you can see how many cars are there, what dates the cars are there, and more importantly, what types of cars are there. Is it a car? Is it a truck? Is it a horse trailer? Is it Mark Livesey's llama trailer? You know, these are things that start to paint the picture, right? There's horses there. There's four horse trailers there September 15th. I'm like, okay. Does that mean we're not going there? No, that does not mean that. But it's painting us a picture. It's like, okay, there's obviously some type of outfitter or individual. And how do we know if it's outfitter traffic? Well, here's a telltale sign. When you see a horse trailer hooked onto a truck and you see three pickups parked right beside it or three cars parked right beside it, that's a very, very good indication of an outfitter because you got clients that are parked beside the outfitter. Mm-hmm. When you see a truck and a horse trailer by itself, now, guys, this isn't rules. I'm just saying that's more than likely an individual that's come in there and is hunting on horseback. Does that make sense? These are just guys, these are so obvious, and they seem so simplistic.
It's stuff too that nobody thinks about. Like I never thought about that, right? But you do have like, there's nothing more frustrating than planning a trip, going into an area where you have like an LEH, you just got an LEH, you plan your hunt, you go into this one specific area, you say, okay, I'm going to get access this way, and you go in there and you realize that an outfitter's in there with three clients at the same time. Nothing that there's anything wrong with outfitters being in there. It's their right. I mean, there's lots of land to cover, but still it's like, oh, are you kidding me? Very frustrating. So, like, those are things definitely to think about. And, like, what we talked about, not the last time you were on, but the time before, is, like, accessing historical data in Google is really good, too. And I never knew anything about that as well.
Because most people don't really – it's a very obscure button at the top, and it's just not obvious. And let's just be honest. I'm going to talk about this tonight on this webinar. Believe it or not, Google Earth was not built for hunters.
And as much as we'd like to think it was made just for us.
They didn't put the buttons in that said, you know, find the best glassing spot, press here. And so again, we're using a tool that wasn't designed for hunting, but it's perfect for hunting. We just got to learn how to manipulate it, adapt it, and more importantly, how to set it up with the right preferences and settings, right? And that's all covered in this course that's coming up in a module we're getting to here. But so zones of pressure, okay? We talked about trailhead analysis. One of the last things, I don't want to give away all of the tricks here, but one of the other things that we, guys, do not trust your hunting apps for motor vehicle and motor vehicle accessible roads. Now, are they accurate most of the time? Yes, they are. Some are better than others, but if you guys have listened to me very long, you're going to learn really quick that I am a master of multiple tools. And I think it's incredibly valuable that you learn how to use multiple tools, not just one. You know, I know guys that have the Onyx tattoo and they're like, man, I bleed red. I got default red waypoint icon tattooed on my shoulder. I'm like, okay. I'm good with that. Looks like we got somebody else trying to join us here, but,
when you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know right here at Hawk's Cave.
Oh, that's awesome.
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.